In today's chapter, we'll be analyzing each character and try to understand some questions of the Gita. So we'll start with Dhritarashtra. So Dhritarashtra already heard several reasons for the likely victory of the Pandavas. He was afraid of the possibility of loss of kingdoms for his own sons, the Kauravas. He therefore asked Sanjaya, "What did my sons Duryodhan and the others, as well as Pandu's son Yudhishthir and the others, actually do on the battlefield at Kurukshetra? Did they undertake the war according to their earlier plan for fighting, or did they act otherwise or do something else as a result of the sagging of the will to fight due to some reason?" Apart from the inbuilt fear complex in the mind of Dhritarashtra, a significant aspect of his question is making a distinction between his own sons and the sons of Pandu. Although the question in the form "What did my sons do?" would have been sufficient, he, by separately mentioning his sons and Pandu's sons, exhibits an absence of family homogeneity and harmony in his mind. The image of the king here is that he is not only physically blind, but also is deprived of the vision of the personal kindness and a human touch and inclusiveness. He is engrossed totally in his affection, exclusively towards his sons. In the entire Gita, this is the only verse which the king, old king Dhritarashtra, gives out. All the rest of the 700 stanzas are Sanjaya's report on what happened on the Kurukshetra battlefield just before the war. The old king is certainly conscious of the palpable injustices that he had done to his nephews, the Pandavas. Dhritarashtra knew the relative strength of the two armies and therefore was fully confident of the larger strength of his son's army. And yet the viciousness of his past and the consciousness of the crimes perpetrated seemed to be weighing heavily upon his heart, and so he his own misgivings on the final outcomes. Dhritarashtra is physically blind, but passion and desire do not disappear with the absence of sight. Even if all sense organs were lost, the desires hidden within mind would not vanish, and so his mind is curious, eager, and troubled to know what is happening on the battlefield. Arjuna is intelligent, and where there is intelligence, there is doubt, and where there is doubt, there is dilemma. Arjuna is rational, and where there is rationality, there lies the capacity to think from a totally different perspective. Where one has these qualities, it is difficult to enter into a dangerous situation like the war with closed eyes. Remember that life does not end the same way as it begins. The end is always unknown and invisible. In this war, Duryodhan's focus was entirely on Bhima. He overlooked the fact that Krishna was on the side of Pandavas, and particularly as the charioteer of Arjuna. He could not visualize that Krishna would retrieve Arjuna from his shortcomings, and consequently the whole story took a different turn and Duryodhana lost. Arjuna requested Krishna to place his chariot between the two armies so that he can observe with whom he has to fight. The points to be noted here: once the observation starts, analysis is not too far behind. Analysis always leads to a wavering of the mind. So Arjuna analyzes the question to fight or not to fight and comes to the conclusion that he should not fight. In all his arguments in support of the conclusion, he puts forward several pleadings which apparently look valid and very wise, but in fact are very hollow, as Krishna proves them to be subsequently. At this stage, although it looks like Arjuna is not obsessed with war, he is not against war either and has no aversion to violence. All his life he has fought many wars, and his whole life's education and training and his lifelong conditioning is all violence and war. Then why he turns his face against the war? We have to understand this paradoxical situation very clearly, because this is the very seed for all the teachings contained in the Bhagavad Gita. Had there not been this ironical situation, the Bhagavad Gita would have not come into existence. The next chapter is Arjuna Syndrome, Origin and Cure. Arjuna was overpowered by an emotional upheaval. He suddenly started exhibiting several symptoms of the weakness, both physically and psychologically. He was afflicted with great depression of mind masquerading as compassion. Arjuna himself described his physical symptoms in graphic terms. It was of nature of fever of unknown origin, or a bhava roga in Sanskrit. This disease is the oldest known to humankind. Its origin is traced to traced to avidya or ignorance in the Vedanta of Hinduism. The divine potion or the elixir that cures this disease is knowledge.
grace of God, issuing from self-surrender, prayer, and freedom from desire, bhakti, prapati, nirvasana, and so on. What makes Gita unique medicine of bhava roga is that it contains all the ingredients stated above, fit to be consumed by people of all ages, climes, genders. Only the Arjuna syndrome, analyzed and diagnosed by the master physician Sri Krishna, is starting point of the preparation of this unique guru. Adi Shankaracharya's description of Arjuna syndrome is simple and remarkable. It is not that Arjuna was unwilling to do his duty as the army general when he came for war. Arjuna is a picture of courage and self-confidence before the war. And afterwards, Arjuna's mood changes, suddenly changes. At what point of time and for what reasons did he become a victim of Arjuna syndrome? If properly analyzed word for word, it gives us a clue that Arjuna saw in huge armies his own people, grandfathers, fathers, brothers, teachers, friends, etc., as was overcome with pity. The key word here is people who are one's very own. It may be noted that Arjuna uses the word in Sanskrit Svajana 4 times in the verses. Arjuna's lament and depression are rooted in this feeling of oneness. Arjuna's ego that strongly felt this attachment, endangered by possessiveness, ownness, or had plunged him into the abyss of sorrow and delusion, shoka and moha. This pathological aberration of Arjuna can be traced to psychological roots that define the Arjuna syndrome. Arjuna displayed the feelings of grief and delusion caused by ignorance and confused understanding, and his attachment for and the sense of separation from dominion, the elder sons, friends, kinsmen, relatives, all this arising from the notion that I am theirs and they are mine. It was when the discriminative faculty knowledge was thus overpowered by grief and delusion that Arjuna, who had himself naturally and spontaneously been engaged in the battle as warrior's duty, abstained from fighting and prepared to lead a mendicant's life, which was a duty alien to him. It was thus in the case of all creatures whose mind come under the sway of defects of sorrow, delusion, etc. There verily follows as a matter of course abandoning their duties and resorting to prohibited ones. Even when they engage in their own duties, they conduct in speech, thought and deed, certainly motivated by hankering for rewards, and is accompanied by egoism. Egoism consists in thinking that one is the agent of some work and therefore enjoyer of its reward. Such being the case, the cycle of births and deaths, characterized by passing through desirable and undesirable births and meeting with happiness, sorrow, etc. from the accumulation of virtue and vice, continues unendingly. This sorrow and delusion are the sources of cycles of births and deaths. This cessation comes from nothing other than the knowledge of the self, which is preceded by the renunciation of all attachment to duties. Hence, wishing to impart that for the welfare of the whole Lord, Lord Vasudeva, making Arjuna the medium, said, "You grieve for those who are not to be grieved for." Thus, Arjuna syndrome analyzed could be reduced to the following: ignorance, confused understanding, feeling of I and mine, ahamkara and mamakara, that is sorrow, delusion, overpowering of the discriminative faculty, abandoning one's own duty, and then adopting alien duty. Even in own duty, craving for reward and egoism, accumulation of merit and demerit, endless cycles of birth and death, consisting of the great experiences of the desirable, undesirable, pleasure and pain. The remedy prescribed by Krishna in the self-knowledge is self-knowledge, which he starts unfolding from verse 11 of the second chapter. This is the greatest relevance of the Bhagavad Gita for the modern world, particularly to the youth, stress-filled, strife-torn, panic-stricken, conflict-ridden modern world. Atmajaya is a source of strength, infinite power, eternal knowledge and wisdom. Like Arjuna, we too are weak, we too have no will. The will has been lost in our never-ending debate, what to do and what not to do, what is proper and what is improper. All the ground beneath our feet is slipping like quicksand. The Arjuna in us is suspended, animation is in limbo. We too require shock treatment. Krishna is holding Arjuna's hand and starting to resolve his problems to the very place where Arjuna is. That is why Gita is a very dynamic psychological system. As Arjuna evolves step by step, the Gita also rises and unfolds gradually. Krishna reforms Arjuna at Arjuna's level. All this time in the Gita, Arjuna is the focus and not Krishna. Krishna, the next chapter is Krishna, the master strategist, the next character. It is better to quote Swami Vivekananda here. He says, "I have heard about Krishna's life. I take it for granted there must have been a man called Krishna, and his Gita shows he has left a wonderful book. He is the most rounded man I know of, wonderfully developed, equally in brain, heart and hand. Every moment of his life with activity, either as a gentleman, warrior, minister or something else. Great as a gentleman, as a scholar, as a poet. This all-rounded and wonderful activity of combination of brain and heart, you see, is the Gita in the Gita and other books. Most wonderful heart, exquisite language, and nothing can approach it anywhere. In Krishna, we find two ideas stand supreme in his message. The first is the harmony of different ideas, and the second is non-attachment. A man can attain to perfection, the highest goal, sitting on a throne, commanding armies, working out big plans for nations. In fact, Krishna's great sermon was preached on the battlefield. How hard is it to arrive at this sort of non-attachment? Therefore, Krishna shows us that the lower ways and the methods, the easiest way for everyone is to do his or her own work and not take the results. It is our desire that binds us. If we take the results of action, whether good or evil, we'll have to bear them. But if we work not for ourselves, but for all for the glory of the Lord, the results will take care of themselves. To work you have the right, but not to the fruits thereof. The soldier works for no results. He does his duty. If defeat comes, it belongs to the general and not to the soldier. We do our duty for love's sake, for the love of general, love for the Lord. With such a kind of charioteer guiding the eminent soldier Arjuna, let us see what strategy Krishna adopted in the very first scene of the Gita to achieve the purpose of his avatar, his descent from Vaikuntha. When Arjuna asked Krishna to place his chariot between the two armies, Krishna placed it with sagacity at such a point from where his kingsmen such as Bhishma, teachers like Drona and other kings and warriors of the Kaurava army could be seen clearly. After keeping the chariot at the crucial point, he told Arjuna, "O Parth, behold all these Kurus assembled here." This statement has got a deep significance. In the word Kuru, the sons of both Dhritarashtra and Pandus are included because both of them belong to the Kuru lineage. Krishna, by saying "behold all these Kurus assembled here," means that they are all one, whether they are on his side or opposite side, and whether they are good or bad, and thus a feeling of kinship may be developed in Arjuna. This feeling of kinship may lead to attachment and make him inquisitive. Thus, by making Arjuna an instrument, Krishna wants to preach the gospel of Gita for the humanity as a whole. Therefore, Krishna, instead of using the word Dhritarashtra, uses the word Kuru. Had he used the former word, Arjuna would have become enthusiastic, as could be observed from Arjuna's dialogue using this word, and would not have been any chance to expound the Gita. Krishna considered his duty to destroy Arjuna's delusion by arousing it and then destroying it, as in the case of certain medical procedures for achieving his avowed purpose of establishing and protecting Dharma in the world through his several incarnations. The relationship between Arjuna and Krishna in this scene is that the car owner and his driver. The driver just drives the car to the place where its owner wants him to go. The driver does not question the owner or passes any comments on the owner's instruction or wish. But here Krishna tells or direct Krishna, "Behold this Kurus." There is no need for this remark, since Arjuna will see assembled the warriors anyway. And Krishna could have placed the chariot without uttering any words, but he intentionally used the word Kurun Pasya to arouse attachment in Arjuna. The main reason of Arjuna's grief is that when Krishna placed the chariot between the two armies and asked Arjuna to behold the Kauravas, he saw his relatives, friends and family, and thus his attachment was aroused. He perceives good in turning away from the war. Overwhelmed with grief, he sinks into the chariot, laying down his arms. Thus we see it is a delusion which changes a hero's great courage into anxiety and worry state neurosis. Then we have the chapter, "Live as the Gita teaches you to live." The core teaching of the Gita core teaching of Krishna in the Gita is that where there is virtue, there is a prospect of victory and glorious life, both in this world and hereafter. And wherever there are vice, unrighteousness, injustice, immorality, there is destruction, physical, moral and spiritual. The senses of I, me and mine are the roots of all evil and bondages in the world, and the sense of you, your bring freedom to the soul. A wise man is the one who goes beyond the sense of I and knows the secret of you, by which he gets rid of the senses of I and mine. As long as we remain selfish, we are caught in the act, in the net of desires in the world. So, as long as we shall not be able to realize the real essence of the Gita, so Krishna says detachment is freedom, attachment is bondage. Therefore, he instructs everybody to perform work disinterestedly, without asking for results thereof, because the desires for the results of the work is in the chain that binds men and drags them into the den of delusion or maya. Krishna represents the realized soul, free of all conditioning, capable of seeing the truth as it is. He is the self in a state of Satchitananda. Arjuna is consciousness, crumpled by conditioning. The chariot he rides is the body. The horses are the senses. The two wheels are desire and destiny. As a charioteer, Krishna does two things. He helps Arjuna to realize the true nature of life. Two, he overpowers the forces that threaten to the social order. He classifies all actions into two, viz. Reactions and response. The former is guided by one's ego, motivated by one's desire, and the latter is guided by one's intellect. Intellect motivated by one's duty. The former focuses on result, while the latter focuses on action. Krishna proves that by responding rather than reacting, by maintaining equanimity and not getting provoked by worldly stimuli, it is possible to satisfy the demands of worldliness, fulfill one's obligation to the society, repay one's debts to ancestors, and still attain moksha, liberation. The Varnashrama Dharma categorizes life into four stages to be lived sequentially, viz. Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyasa. Krishna's suggestion is that simultaneous rather than sequential achievement of material joy and spiritual bliss is possible.